you don't want to have the appearance of a dual role relationship, or it's kind of considered less than this kind of strict professional relationship. And we understand why those guidelines are in place, why that is in many respects. And so, however, Shannon was in a place for many years. She was a counselor, but because of the nature of the work that she does with her clients, it just became clear to her that that maybe getting the CPC and becoming a coach might be the best thing in terms of what she does and how she does it. So if you would like to talk about your transition from that and kind of, was it awkward at first, or did you just?
Absolutely. Yeah. Sure. So I was a licensed professional counselor for about 14 years. And during that time, I worked with clients from all different backgrounds, whether they had an eating disorder, which is my specialty, to childhood sexual abuse, to anything in between that. So they might have just generalized anxiety disorder and have something, maybe something like agoraphobia, where they were afraid to leave their home. And so literally just coming to see me in my counseling office was a huge victory for them for the week. And so I saw a large group of ladies with lots of different disorders. So during that time, I would see them in my office only, or if they couldn't make it to my office, they would join me on a phone call. That was before we did Zooms regularly. And so maybe a phone call or a FaceTime appointment. But that was very limiting because there were so many different things that we had to go over and discuss. And sometimes doing that on the phone was very limiting. And also in the constraint of a 50-minute session, when they'd walk into my office, sometimes they would just completely lose their words. They would come, maybe they had an entirely awful week,
right?
But they are empowered to come into my office and they kind of want to just come in and tell me some good things first to make light of their situation. And even with the best redirecting skills, we could only get to the heart of the matter, maybe
10, 15
minutes in. And so, and then on the other hand, sometimes maybe they really did have a rough week and they just want, and they came in wanting to discuss something really awful. But when they came in, maybe that earlier that day, they'd had such a wonderful day. This sounds ridiculous, but maybe they just completely forgot all the bad things and wanted to discuss the really amazing things that had happened. And so what I started realizing is that my clients would leave my office after having made some really great goals for the week, after having talked about some really difficult things, maybe unloading some really difficult baggage. And then they'd walk out of the office, maybe feeling like re-traumatized from what we talked about, or needing extra support, or needing something else, but our 50 minutes was up, and my next client was in the lobby, and there they went.
Right.
And there was a huge part of me that just felt like that was not me doing my best, or giving my best effort as a counselor. I felt like there was much more that I could do. So the transition into coaching felt like a huge relief to me, because I felt like I was able to be present for my clients in a way that I never had been before.
What was it like when you were in the coaching program that you went to? What was it like in your mind? Like, okay, you're sitting in there and you're getting this training as a coach and you're comparing and contrasting, but what were your thoughts then? Or did you have any fears then? Like, oh my gosh, is this really going to work?
I did two different coaching courses. One was a short weekend coaching course where we just learned kind of the ins and outs of how to run a coaching business, how to market yourself, how to get out there and rebrand yourself and get yourself out into the community to show people, hey, here's my name and here's what I'm doing now, which was very helpful because I had always been a licensed professional counselor. And moving into the coaching world, it's a totally different hat. It may look very, if you're just kind of like peeking in on somebody doing a coaching session, it may look like a therapy session, but it is very different in what we talk about. And so the coaching course itself, the short weekend coaching course, was wonderful because it just helped me to understand, like, okay, this is how I'm going to change my wording when I talk about what I do versus what I used to do. And then I took another very long course, and that was an eating disorder specific coaching course.
Oh, really? Okay. That's right. I remember that.
Yes.
Talk about that a little bit.
So that was with the Carolyn Costin Institute.
Oh, that's right.
It was
right.
Fantastic. It was worth every penny.
How long was that program?
Well, it probably takes different amounts of time for different people.
How long did it take you to go through it?
I think it took me about 6 months, and that was just because I was already coaching.
Okay.
And I was parenting my children at home, and so that I would do this in the evening.
So you went pretty quickly, is what you're saying?
I feel like I did it at a pretty good pace. I would do it several hours in the evening, maybe two or three nights a week. Okay. So it was kind of like taking a master's level course at your own pace. So we learned how not to coach, meaning you're not a therapist. You are not there to fix their trauma needs. You are not there to work through and process certain aspects of their emotions. You are not there to diagnose. You are just there as a coach. It is a completely different realm where you are there to help them to access coping skills, to help them in the moment and the here and now, and work with them on their current struggles. And so, for example, since I do work with eating disorders, if I have girls who are struggling with over-exercise or restricting food, one of their goals might be to reach out to me in the moment. And so before exercising or before binging and purging, my clients regularly reach out to me, and they may call me, they may text me, they may just FaceTime me in the middle, and depending on whether I'm available or not, I may or may not answer, but they have already put themselves out with accountability, like, hey, I'm struggling, and that allows me to either answer in the moment or connect with them very shortly thereafter.
And that's part of the coaching paradigm, right?
Correct.
I mean, that's not part of a counseling paradigm, right?
That is not part of therapy.
Right.
Counseling on
exactly.
any level.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So I was able to meet my clients literally where they are in the here and now.
Awesome.
In the coaching session, whereas in my counseling practice, I would see them for our 50 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
We would make wonderful and very well thought out goals and plans. Mm-hmm. And then they would walk out the door and freeze because they didn't have the tools to actually do it. And maybe they had the tools in theory in their head of what to do, but sometimes they literally needed somebody to walk beside them out in the real world, which I couldn't do from my office.
Okay. So I'm glad to see, and obviously with the eating disorders, I mean, that's a very specialized group, and I'm glad that, you know, that you got that extra training. I think that, you know, one of the things I see is I see people maybe go through a 3-day class and they, okay, I'm a brain surgeon now.
All right.
And not just kidding. But, you know, they'll be like seeing, whoa, these kind of tough specialty topics and stuff like that. And, you know, and look, and some people have the requisite training in whatever they were doing prior, and that's fine. I mean, I guess I consider myself one of those coming from a clinical psychology background and being a licensed person for years and years and years. And so, but you're right. I think that a lot gets lost in that paradigm where, you know, you have the person for the hour, you meaningfully engage as best you can. Mm-hmm. Your client's in their own space as well, obviously.
Right.
And then the hour's over, the next one's in the waiting room, and it's just churn and burn, if you will, through the schedule of the day.
Yes.
And I have, sadly, because I'm doing both, I do have those days now and again where I have back to back to back. And, the other thing I would say too is, I don't know if there's a politically correct way of saying that, but I just feel more relaxed when I'm seeing my coaching clients. Mm-hmm. I go, oh, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
I kind of, because I'm a coach now and I'm not a therapist now.
Yes.
You know, so I feel more at ease, you know?
Absolutely.
Kind of like just being more of a regular person a little bit more, you know, with being the coach. So
yeah.
I think that's another aspect. So let's kind of move to a case example or two.
Sure.
I remember you sharing with me, it's probably a couple of years ago now, but I remember you sharing with me about you actually helped a client purchase food at the store. And, yeah. and so kind of go through some of those things.
So I have, yeah. I remember that example, and I have a very similar example of another woman that I'm working with right now.
Okay.
This is absolutely something you cannot do as a licensed right. counselor. This is a no-no for many reasons.
For sure.
But for with the population that I work with, and mostly I do, my specialty is in eating disorders. When I was a counselor, I was a licensed certified eating disorder specialist. And so when I transitioned, I again put all of my, I wouldn't say I put all my chips in, but I really do enjoy the eating disorder community. They're amazing people, and they're just tripping up in different ways than we are. Mm-hmm. And so another woman that I'm working right now, and I'm able to work with her in ways that I never was able to as a therapist. And truthfully, I feel like we've come so much further than we would have just chatting about what she should do. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, she had a long history of anorexia. She was a cheerleader, gymnast, athlete. And she, but all of the sports, if you will, that she was engaging in as a young woman always had to be a low weight. And then when she became an adult, she became a marketing rep from a very fancy pharmaceutical place. And oh, wow. in her
body
business,
shape, yeah.
her body image was everything. And she did very well for herself. However, during that time, beginning when she was in early adolescence, around 13 or 14, mm-hmm. She began having body image issues, and that all blossomed and developed into a full-blown eating disorder, which almost killed her in college. And having worked through some of those issues,
can you say which was it, like anorexia or so, keep liberty to say,
like a both, lot of people, or? Like a lot of people, she started out with anorexia, and mm-hmm. most people can only restrict for so long
right.
until they just are, you know, hungry.
Right.
We get hungry, our body speaks to us. And so it turned into bulimia and exercise bulimia, what is what we call it. And so during that time, she went through treatment, in and out of treatment through her young adult life, got to a place where she was an older adolescent, became in her mid-20s, got married, started, working, but also being married and having different things that she had to engage in other than just her job. And she found that when she moved into her new house, it was so foreign to her, she just could not function. Mm-hmm. And every part of her eating disorder came back to her. Fear of going to the store, fear of using her kitchen, fear of...
What triggered that? Just the environment? Just the...
I think being married, transitioning out of young adulthood okay. into like proper adulthood where she was married and had a mortgage.
Okay.
And, you know, she was adulting
okay.
100% of the time.
Okay.
And really that's all we can, you know. And my job is not to figure out
no, no,
why.
No, I'm sorry.
Well, and that's just a portion of it. Like, we don't have to figure out
curious.
Why
right.
as a coach. We're just there to meet them in the moment.
I was curious. Sorry about that.
So anyway, that was a really neat point that she was able to say, I don't really know why this is happening, but here's where I am. And so she and I did very similar things to the other client I spoke about years ago. She could not bring herself to go shopping in the beginning. So we would go to the parking lot of the random stores around here in this South Lake area. Or we would go and just show up in the little deli section and just peruse all of the items that they
it's
had
kind
on
of
display.
A systematic desensitization
absolutely.
Of sorts.
Absolutely. We would just discuss all the different wow. cheeses and meats that they had on their little charcuterie board. And
From a distance. From a comfortable distance.
And as time went by, we came across, there was an afternoon that we went shopping and they had samples out. And she said, should we have a sample? Should we? And I was like, yeah, let's try the samples. So we ended up having samples, and that day we actually purchased a few things and went to her very fancy kitchen and made a few things.
Oh, wow.
And it was huge. I never could have done that with my clients. We could talk about it till we were blue in the face, but we never would have shown up at Central Market together. Right.
Wow.
And so that was really huge for me. Even, I mean, I'm,
well, let's talk about, yeah. let's, I want to savor that moment for a minute.
Yes.
So what's the, so how, okay, so it sounds like it could be almost a synergy of some things. I hate to use that word. But anyway, synergy.
Okay.
Good Lord. I know. I'm sorry. It is. But you got to go there experience it in vivo live, the eating of the sample, and then transitioning to her kitchen, and then for her to make something like
it was a very simple something, but we were proud of it.
That's what I want you to talk about. Like, how was that just a huge breakthrough? Like, I agree with you, but just tell our listeners.
Absolutely. Like, so, as a therapist, I would get to hear about their success later in other times. Right. So, like a week later or 3 days later, they would say, "Hey, everybody went to a movie, and I actually ate some of the popcorn." And I'd hear about it later. But I was never there to share in
or be part of that experience.
Yeah. And so it was really exciting to not only have her initiate, like, is that something we could do? Could we sample the food?
Wow.
We sampled the food together.
And you're going at her own pace, obviously.
Absolutely. And then we purchased two or three items and we took it back to her house and we made a very simple little lunch. On little paper plates and we enjoyed lunch together. And that's the first time we had actually eaten together. We had talked about it a lot and made plans, but she wasn't quite ready yet. And that day she was, and I was there to, stand alongside with her. And so that was clearly a victory for her.
Wow.
But for me, having been a therapist and hearing about the victory secondhand, but to be there in the moment with her was just,
you know, how great is that? You know, I mean, I'm envious in a good way, that you're able to be there with your client when they're making that game. Mm-hmm. Like you're there, you're part of that experience live. You were there when the meal was made, you were there when the things were purchased at the store. And, you know, even as a coach, and I do a lot of coaching as well, but usually it's, hey, let's set a goal to help you eliminate the self-defeating thoughts.
Yes.
Person then comes back and says, "Hey, I had a good week." So, how great is that, folks? That she's able to, or maybe I'm just not smart enough to carve a way out that I can be there. Just kidding.
It also gave me a different perspective because, again, like when she was struggling with those same behaviors or thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, weeks from then, I was able to pull from that experience and the self-talk that she was able to use and the thoughts that she was experiencing that day, because we talked about all the positive thoughts that she was having about not just her body image, but like, hey, I can do this. All these other women in here are taking samples, because there were some ladies in front of us that were just like cleaning off the little charcuterie board they put out, and she's like, these other women are doing it, why can't I? And so I was able to pull from that positive experience and remind her of what empowered her that day, whereas I never would have had that experience to pull from had I not been right there.
You know, that's really interesting, you know, because part of our job as coaches is to help our clients remove self-limiting thoughts.
Yes.
Okay, that's kind of coaching in a box.
Sure.
I mean, it's probably one of the first big thing that coaches do is help people from negative self-talk and self-defeating behavior or self-defeating thinking.
Absolutely.
Okay. And so I'm almost thinking like Pavlov here. So you're the descriptor, because y'all are at the store. She's buying stuff. And with you being present at the store, you're the discriminative stimulus, if you will, folks, for our Pavlovian friends out there. So she sees you as a prompt, because what carries over from that prompt is the positive thinking that y'all talked about, right?
Absolutely.
Because it'd be a little bit hard for, I'm no good, I'm a piece of blah, blah, blah. No, no, because you're there and you're with her in that moment and those moments to follow.
Yes.
It helps her maintain the positive thought string.
And we'd already practiced and discussed, like we already had a list of things that she knew that were truth about her own self.
Nice.
She just had trouble bringing it into reality in the present time and using it when the stimulus that was scary was present.
So tell us, I was fascinated. So tell us about that truth list, if you will.
So she knew for a fact that she was a smart, educated woman. And she'd always thought, because she was a cheerleader and, you know, that she'd always been looked at as this ditzy silly, beautiful woman that just had a really great body, and that's all that people saw. So that she knew that as she got older, she had to keep her body in check, because she knew in her head the lie was that that's all that people saw is just her body. And so forget what she looked like. She is the most, one of the most educated, brilliant women that I've ever worked with. And so she had to be reminded that not only was, did she go to several different schools that,
prestigious, yeah.
Yes, okay. That she had straight A's. She didn't just graduate.
No.
She had amazing, graduated cum laude type of grades.
Sure.
Not just, you know, I flew D4 through degree, yeah. Hitting all the parties. She like really dedicated herself while cheerleading, which,
yeah.
Is a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
And it's a lot of time away from your books, yet she still excelled. And so one of her truths was that I'm an educated, brilliant, smart woman. And that's something that we had to, you know, consistently reinforce in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then it just became like, then it was almost like rude that anybody would think otherwise.
But walk us through the other truths pertains to food selection. And
so the other truth that we had to find was that what the internet tells us about food is not always correct. Another truth that she had to look at was that I don't have to follow the meal plan that my mom and my coaches gave me. And emphasis on mom, because mom wanted her to have that little body too.
Is this client under 40?
No.
Okay.
Not anymore.
Okay. Just check.
During
the cooking experience was the client?
Gotcha.
No, I'm just trying to.
Yeah. So
see what Jean, because if you're still using your mom's meal plan, you know what I'm saying?
But if you're always ingrained in this is how you've always eaten and this is how you've always maintained this body.
Okay.
It was more, it wasn't a traditional meal plan thing. Okay. As far as like, don't eat French fries. It was like, if you're going to eat French fries, that's the only thing you're going to eat
that day. Oof.
So it was a very calorie restrictive meal plan. So it wasn't food based. It was, it was like, don't do this or otherwise you're going to have to exercise for the next 4 hours. Right. And so that's how she had lived for.
Okay.
You know, so another truth was I don't have to listen to the number, the caloric number of my food. I can listen to my own body and be content. And truly, like fast forward when she began doing that, her body stayed the same. She was shocking to her that she didn't gain 15 pounds right out of the gate. She had already worked up to at this point to eating a little bit more.
Okay.
But they were very healthy, food conscious, you know, like only clean eating and doing.
Did you work out the diet plan with her?
So so that's another cool thing. I hate to like switch gears.
Oh, sorry.
But a lot of my clients have a dietitian.
Oh, wow.
A psychiatrist, a medical doctor, and a whole team of people that work alongside with them. And so I just get a regular release of information, just like I would have if I had been a therapist.
Yep.
And I can talk to the team. So this woman in particular didn't have a current dietitian at the time.
Okay.
But she'd had them forever. So she knew what she was supposed to do.
Okay.
And I looked over her meal plan and it was excellent. It truly did mimic some of the greatest meal plans that I have for some of my other adult women. And so I was okay with that. And so she started actually following that meal plan closer to the beginning, but she did have a hard time. Like if she and her husband went out to eat, not looking at the calories beforehand. And so one of the things we transitioned from is that it was okay to just choose a meal based upon what I want to eat versus I'm going to get the baked chicken with steamed broccoli, which was her go-to because it's easy.
Sure.
You know, you don't have to have the calories written out to know that it's a clean eating health, you know, what a lot of people call healthy.
Right.
And so, and her body did not change at all. She, you know, she incorporated mindfulness skills and listened to her body over time. This is not like overnight, obviously. This took a while.
So mindfulness in the sense that, hey, I'm getting full. I can take the rest of this home. Type of mindfulness?
Yes. And so one of the greatest things we did once is we went out to lunch and we each got a cheeseburger with French fries.
Ouch.
And it was terrifying. It really truly was one of the scariest things she had done in years. She had not had a good old fashioned cheeseburger since she could remember. So it had been years and years. And so we each got a cheeseburger and French fries and we both ate quite a bit of it and then stopped. And we sat there in that restaurant for probably 2 hours just talking about how she was feeling. And, you know, when we were done with our cheeseburger and french fries, we didn't take it to go or be ridiculous with it. When we were done, we just threw it away. And moved on. And because one of the things that I want to teach my clients is that when you are done, you can be done with that meal. And this is not, I'm not talking about if you're cooking at home and you're doing leftovers. I'm talking about in general, if there are foods that you are scared of and you allow yourself to have a cheat day, then you just eat everything. And I have clients who will eat 3, 4, 5+ thousand calories because it's their cheat day and just feel so sick. And so instead of having clean eating every day except Saturday when you have your cheat day, I encourage them to have some ice cream, but have a mindful amount because it's going to be there tomorrow. You can go have another little scoop of ice cream tomorrow and you're not going to gain 50 pounds. Being mindful every day versus, you know, sink or swim. Because if you eat the entire bucket of Bell ice cream, everybody's going to feel sick.
But what if I got a doggy bag and took the burger, the remaining burger and fries home? Would that have been antithetical or?
No, if that's something that you wanted to do, but most of my clients don't want to do that.
And why don't they want to do that?
You know, there's probably a lot that goes behind that, but they want to eat it when it's fresh and it tastes good. Otherwise they'd be wasting it. You know,
okay.
I would do that. I have done that. I do practice that. But in the beginning, that's not something that they're going to want to do.
I didn't know if there was some sort of a
I'm thrilled with
ninja
that.
Trick with that. No, don't do that. I'm thrilled with that.
Okay. I just purchased an air fryer and throw those.
The ninja thing?
Yes, that one. It's amazing.
It is. Nothing so, short.
I'm okay with that. But sometimes it's a little much to have your food sitting there while you're talking about the food.
And I know her name isn't Wayne Fritz. It says Wayne on there. But Wayne is a cooking extraordinaire person. He's really... wishing he could be here today because Wayne knows so much about food and food preparation. It's scary. and I know a lot about food consumption, obviously. I know.
That is negative.
Yes, it is. It's true. Okay. So, you got to be there. Sounds like this client of yours has a arsenal of other resources possibly, or had at least the dietitian on deck to really help.
Yes.
And so you got to kind of communicate with the team, but also kind of clarify what your lane is.
Absolutely.
Your lane.
Yes. And that's something we talk about frequently because while sitting with and talking to clients for a very long time, just as if you were hanging out with somebody that you were very close to in your regular personal life, people will talk to you about personal things. And so if let's say we're having lunch and that cheeseburger, you know, while it looks like a normal cheeseburger to you and I, reminds them of something that was really sad or traumatic, or maybe something is going on currently in their, in their life and they want to discuss it. My rule is if it is affecting their judgment and their personal like behaviors other than their, you know, if it's affecting their eating disorder coping skills in the here and now, we can talk about that. But if it is something that happened long ago and they are just rehashing it and going back to it and back to it, I will ask them to continue that conversation with their therapist. And it's a fine line. I'm not trying to say I'm disinterested in what they have to say, because I am. But that it is not something that we go down that rabbit hole, because it's not therapy.
What if I said, random thought
here. Throw it at me.
But this is just me. What if I said, I used to eat these Five Guys cheeseburgers to self-medicate when I was going through this tough time in my life 10 years ago. So is that kind of on the fence? Is that like affecting my...
Well, so that would be affecting, like, are we going to Five Guys and we're going to experience that Five Guys, but we're going to have a cheeseburger. And we're going to practice eating one cheeseburger and not getting four to go, so you can have it secretly.
And not using it to self-medicate.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And discussing also how you're feeling after the one cheeseburger. Because physically, you're going to feel very normal. You might feel full, but you're not going to feel like five cheeseburgers full.
Right.
And it's a different physiological feeling. And then coping skills, like, now what are we going to do? Do you want to take a walk at the park? Do you want to go, you know, get coffee somewhere? You can move along with your day and not just sit in that feeling
and
full.
Right. And yeah. And there's not so much focus on the meal. You can kind of.
Absolutely.
Now let's do activity B or C.
And that's something that I teach my clients. If I do go into their home or if I'm coaching the parents as to how to deal with dinner time, because that's a really, like, sitting down at the dinner table in people's homes is a world, gives you a world of information that you would never receive sitting on this couch talking about what their home looks like.
The heart of family dynamics.
But going into their home, you're going to see a whole different culture. So I, I'm able to, A, remind them that most meals, it would look a little bit nicer. I'm not going to say should, but it could look a little bit better if you're sitting at the table engaging in each other and discussing and talking and distracting from the meal. You're talking about your day or something that happened at school or your, you know, all the things we talk about at dinner, not you really need to eat that or you know, focusing on the food.
Now, I got a question. This is, so in this situation, let's say you're having the family dinner and you're part of the family dinner.
Yes.
There's a coach with the family dinner. Your client has their portion, mom, dad, sister, brother, whatever they have their, like, is there something like, are you involved with everybody's portion, just your client's portion? Is the presentation a little bit different? Like, yeah.
So I would go and sit with the family as if I was just a guest. Like, maybe I'm like Aunt Susie who just came and sat down at the table.
And just do some observation one time?
I would mostly do observation at that point because at that point, my clients will have a meal plan, and that's based on exchanges. So they're going to have like a protein and two carbs and a fat. And their meal plan, especially if they're underweight and they're trying to gain a significant amount of weight because maybe they lost 20 pounds during COVID and they're a seventh grader.
Oh,
so
wow.
They look clearly underweight. And the rest of the family has done whatever they've been doing during COVID. But maybe it doesn't need to be meal plan specific. And so my client will get their meal and the rest of us will get a meal that looks very similar. We don't like short order cook for eating disorders. Like, you're going to get what we're all getting. You just may get a little bit larger of a portion. Now, to the anorexic person, that looks so unfair. Like, why don't we all have to eat that much food? And so that's a good topic of conversation. Like, everybody else at the table is at a, probably at a weight that they don't need to gain 20 pounds. And so now their eating disordered mind is not gonna sit with that very well.
Do you have to enlist the help of the other family members to?
I do. Yeah. I have to teach parents, you know, because parents have this empathetic response of not eating either. So if their kid's sitting there stirring their mashed potatoes, you'll look over and dad's just stirring his mashed potatoes because he has no idea what to do with himself.
Right.
And then the other kid's like, get me out of here. So they eat as fast as they can
and
dodge, you know,
kind
that
excuse,
situation.
Yeah.
And so you have to just help normalize. And so, and what is normal? You have no idea. So you have to just kind of like remind everybody before you sit down and before you plate everybody's food, you acknowledge that it's weird that you have Shannon sitting at your table. And then just say, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. And you talk very briefly because you don't want to put like, even though it's sister or whatever, like, you don't want to put them on the hot seat anyway because they're already feeling ridiculous.
Right.
But it really rarely feels that way because we acknowledge that we're here and we're all going to take our time eating. We're not going to rush through it, but we're not going to not eat. And we're all going to talk about, you know, different topics. And that usually goes very well because having a random person at your table, everybody's kind of following the rules, unless they're not.
Right.
Those are exciting. I've been through a few very exciting meals, too, where food is thrown and plates and messes.
Oh, really? Good. I mean,
it's the real world. And once you've been there more than once,
your family now,
forget to follow the rules.
Crap in front of you.
Yes.
And
you get to really see the family dynamics in person rather than even if you have a family therapy session in your office, sitting at their kitchen table is a whole different
Oh, gosh.
Panel.
I can only imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's amazing, you know, that you can. You can do that level of work. It's just so much more thorough.
Yes.
And it seems like the client achieves their goals sooner.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Talk a little bit about retention once the goals have been met initially? There's got to be a
good question because a lot of times, if you have somebody with an eating disorder, the parents are on high alert. They want their kid to be fixed now, better, better because people with eating disorders, especially young adolescents, have a high morbidity rate. It's a rough population.
Meaning they have other things wrong with them they're dealing with at the same time? Or you're saying relapse? And
they have a high relapse rate. Okay. They have a high percentage of my clients have, they die because they have a heart attack or, maybe they pass out and hit their head. Like there's a million reasons as to why they're, it might not say die because of.
So you meant morbidity for real.
As in death. So when you speak to retention, their parents come in and want them to be better, which I understand.
And this is even with kids and adolescents, huh?
So especially through COVID, my childhood numbers rose. I had 10 and 11-year-olds in my office. And so that's a lot of parenting skills, right? Yeah, that's more like teaching the parents how to parent again when their little girl turned into, somebody else that they'd never met. So retention. The first thing that I alert everybody to is this is not going to be, 5 to 6 sessions and everybody's going to be better.
Right.
If the kid is very sick, which normally by the time they find me, the kid's either out of treatment, they've exhausted all of their resources and they're like, let me try this lady. And so when they come to me, I remind them that they will have to continue seeing their dietitian, their psychiatrist, their medical doctor. I don't weigh my clients. I want my office to be completely safe. There's not a scale.
That's good.
Which means that makes their dietitian kind of the bad guy or the medical doctor the bad guy.
Keeps you in your lane as a coach.
But I'm in my lane and they're in theirs.
Absolutely.
And so, I tell them that the honest truth is that it could be up to 6 months, maybe not weekly sessions. And occasionally this happens, people just jump right on board because maybe they're old enough, maybe they're like 14, but their hair is falling out and they've stopped having their period. And for whatever reason, they're like, actually, this is terrible. I'm going to fix this. That is not the norm. Sometimes I can see a kid for 3 to 6 months and they're fabulous and they move on. And it was truly just a phase. It was not even diagnosable to the standards.
Right.
However, the norm is that at 3 to 6 months is when their eating disorder with me really just gets ugly.
Peaks.
Because they finally just allow it to just all hang out. Mm-hmm. And that's when the family meetings, because I will coach and teach the parents right alongside my adolescents. And when I have adult women, I work with their husbands or their parent that they live with, or if they live all by themselves, I get up in their business real quickly because they don't have anybody else.
Right.
So once they get better, and that could be clearly anywhere from 3 to 6 months to maybe 2 years, which sounds like a lifetime when it's your 15.
Yeah, but these are tough conditions, tough if cases. You will, that yes, that don't.
So if they stick with me and let's say in 2 years, they're doing really, really well. And they're finally a senior in high school. Those girls typically stick around and check in with me like once a month. So it is not, on any level, something that you would think, wow, that's a lot. They might check in with me once a month.
Okay.
And then they go to college and they check in with me as their schedule allows, but we'll FaceTime. And it's a great level of accountability.
Yes.
I have one girl that, and this is going to sound ridiculous, but I saw her in therapy for 3 or 4 years. It's been like 18 years ago.
Wow.
And she still checks in with me every few months.
Yeah.
So retention.
People
are invested in it. They stick around.
And also retention of the goals that they activated. But
literally,
not so much.
But I mean, if they're still checking in and being accountable,
that's a sign that they're doing it.
Absolutely.
I know we got just under 10 minutes left in theory. Let's see here. Maybe not. We have 10 minutes. How about that? I can see now. And we didn't go over this, so this is totally off the cuff. Can you talk about your packages? You don't necessarily have to say your rate, but what packages are your common packages that you deliver?
Okay. You're going to regret asking that question.
Oh, my gosh.
So when you're in coaching school, they kind of teach you to offer a package and say, offer 10 packages charge X amount. And then you'll hold that on retainer and you'll just use that as you go.
That's fine.
So I never did that.
Okay.
So what I do is I collect a credit card number when they come in, and then I have a credit card on file. And that way, when they
call or
when they call or check in, I run their card at the end of that session. And for the, you know, 1% of people who see me once and they realize, wow, I'm going to have to do a lot of work, and they never call me back again, then I know.
Yeah.
Then I ran their credit card once and I never see them again.
Right.
Usually those people circle back 2 years later and say, remember that one time I saw you? So that's fine. But the rest of the people, after each session, I run their credit card, or some of them come in and pay with cash or a check, and that's fine. Okay. And then I obviously don't run their credit card, but, I just charge at the end of each session, and, then they go on their little merry way.
Okay.
And in the middle, I haven't talked about this at all. I don't charge for this. It's just part, I guess this is part of the package of seeing me, is that I encourage, whether they are struggling or not struggling, to check in with me regularly. Mm-hmm. And that way, when they do encounter a crisis, maybe they just talked to me 2 days ago about something wonderful that happened through text or whatever, and they'll say to themselves, okay, well, I check in with her all the time. It's okay if I tell her that I went to the bathroom in third period and threw up. Because that sounds very abrupt and out of nowhere, but I hear about that all day long, every day. It right. might be really difficult if you're the one sending the personal text about that.
Not to sound tacky, but if it's a check-in, do you wait till they're a full individual before you run the card? Do you run the card even at, to a lesser extent on the check-in?
So if I know they're seeing me that day, mm-hmm. and I usually have a paperwork break and lunch break, I run all my cards then. So maybe I saw you at 8 o'clock this morning or 7 o'clock this morning. I run it at lunch usually. Mm-hmm. But if I'm also seeing you at 4 o'clock, I run it at my lunchtime because I have a 24-hour cancellation. And so if you show up,
either way,
you pay me. And if you don't show up,
okay. Then so it really is kind of a one-on-one pay at the time of service-esque
yep.
thing. It's not like you said, some prescripted package amount. Okay. Right. So let me ask this question.
Okay.
I know you're not counseling and doing formal, but do you do some sort of an assessment? In other words, you know, you talk to the client, you perform some sort of an assessment.
Absolutely.
And then you'd kind of say, okay, typically in my experience, someone in your similar circumstances is in coaching from blah to blah months. I mean, do you do that, or tell me how you. We're good. Okay. You should come back. Go ahead.
All right. So there's two parts to that. Obviously, I had the clinical experience as a therapist to know how to diagnose and to assess a patient. And so with some of my girls coming in that they're underweight, or they're very sick, or they're having, you know, they're telling me that their heart is racing all of the time.
Okay.
With that situation, I'm going to immediately say, okay, I would love to work with you. You're a fantastic person to work with. However, in order to stay under the umbrella of working with Shannon Hermine Consulting, you also need to go to Girls to Women Health and Wellness, which is a fabulous okay. treatment medical office that I use, that they only specialize in eating disorders. You're going to okay. have to see a dietitian. And we're going to have to form a team. And that way we have some accountability. So because my clients are at risk of death,
right.
I need them to be seen.
Sure.
So that, and also if I can see that they are, you know, clearly underweight, they're just out of, you know, maybe just out of the hospital, or maybe they're being referred mm-hmm. to a hospital by their therapist who asked me to work with them in between that transition, I can with ease tell them this is going to take several more months just to get you into a place where you've, you know, found some comfort in
good.
Eating.
Good. Yeah, I mean, that's good, because that assessment, the sound still goes. I don't know if the picture's up or not.
Okay.
We kind of got knocked off on the bandwidth there, but I know our audio is still going. So, well, good, because I know that some sort of assessment, you know, needs to take place.
Absolutely.
And kind of know where your client is in their journey.
And in the same token, if they are very sick and they are unwilling to get medical and a true medical assessment by a specialist who works with eating disorder, maybe mm-hmm. they just went and saw their primary care doctor, and a lot of primary care doctors will say, oh, you're fine, you're just growing. And I can tell just by looking at them that they're very ill. Then mm-hmm. I will say that I would love to, but I cannot work with them unless they see the eating right. disorder specialist that I work
right.
with.
Right. And that's good. You know, we talk about on the show so many times of staying in our lane, not taking on a client that's in need of more pronounced clinical services, let's say, mm-hmm. even though we may have some of that clinical training to really kind of, you know,
that's not the lane we're in.
Be really honest with ourselves, make that referral and not worry, you know, worry back. Cause I know that some coaches really are more fund and, you know, money conscious and they don't necessarily want to lose a client, but again, doing particularly with your clients that seem to have
lose them.
have, like you said, there's this risk of death running around pretty much with nearly every client, and then kind of going from there really ups the stakes. So
absolutely.
I'm so glad you did that. So let's look at our time now. All right, 3 minutes and some change. So Shannon, tell our listeners and viewers how they can reach your coaching practice. Yeah.
Okay.
Websites and
other social media. You would ask me this and my mind goes blank.
It's okay.
So most of my clients, at the end of the day, they will hear about me. They'll look at my website. They'll see my email address. They will just send me a text message. That's where, like, most of the clients that I see are either children or millennials.
Shannon Herman Consulting. What's the website again? What was it?
ShannonHermanConsulting.com.
I think that's what it is. Yeah. ShannonHermanConsulting.com. Now, do you have any other social media touch points? That's pretty much it.
So I use that mostly. My website, I'm on PsychologyToday.com.
Psychology Today.
Lots of people find me there. And if you want to text me, literally that's what most people do. They just text me at 214-837-0457. Most of my younger adolescent and college-aged and young adult clients, before they've even looked at my website, will text me and say, hey, what do you do? Because that's where they are.
Yeah.
And so you kind of have to meet people where they are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, good. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank
it was a pleasure having
me.
You. Thank you for sharing your experiences and folks. It's just, you know, it is just a wonderful thing to be a coach, kind of that round peg, round hole experience there with what Shannon's doing and some other things we've talked about on the show. So love to have you come back sometime.
Thank you.
And get an update on things. And thanks again for sharing your experience with us. And folks, don't forget to check us out here on our social media pages, concierge_coaches on Instagram, our Facebook page, Concierge Coaches. And I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. Also, this is available for you for free on Apple Podcasts and iHeartRadio. Little podcast that could. We're on several aggregators now, and iHeartRadio and Apple Podcasts, and of course on the great latalkradio.com site. All of our shows are archived, where you can get the MP3 version of the show or get the full video of our countenances, and you can download that for free on your own computer or device. So with that, we'll bid everybody a great week and come back next week to the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Wayne will be back and we'll have a very exciting guest at that time. So take care, everybody. We'll see you later. Bye.
Thank
the camera's
you.
Still on.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.